good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, January 27th, 2022. Hi there, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy Thursday and happy National Chocolate Cake Day. I hope, especially if it's any listener's birthday, that you'll have your chocolate cake and be able to eat it too. How about that? Hey, but listen, this doesn't have anything directly to do with gold, but it's fascinating. It's National Cowboy Poetry Gathering Day as well. How about that?
Oh, that's pretty cool.
National Cowboy Poetry Gathering Week actually has taken place annually in Elko, Nevada since 1985. Generations of ranch families experiencing the enjoyment of hearing a well-told story with a new twist or two, a poem passed down over the years, or cutting a rug to live Western music. Now, unfortunately, this year's in-person event has been canceled because of what.
Yeah.
But you can catch up on all the cowboy.
And it's outside, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. It is, actually. And there's some inside seminars, I guess. But you can catch up on all the cowboy and girl poetry online at nationalcowboypoetrygathering.org.
There you go.
A very fascinating website for history of the gathering. Check out westernhorseman.com. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Did you go to the sites? Did you check
it out? I did.
Cool.
Yes, it fascinating. They had a huge lineup of artists, musical artists, poets, well, cowboys, cowgirls who wrote some poetry. Got artists like Montana's Mike Beck and the Bohemian Saints, Sam Platts and the Plainsmen, and Wiley and the Wild West. So, fun stuff. Something new there.
Oh, you're a poet and don't know it.
How about it? I wonder if any of them sing songs about the good old gold rush.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll be there next year singing or writing or...
Can only hope. Maybe we'll have
something about a poet.
Have an entry for their consideration.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, and the way gold is going for these past 2 days, we're not going to have enter in anything. But I think it'll be a whole different ball game a year from now. So we get what we do, we get what we get, and all the markets are doing things that are surprising. So we had gold down another $25 today, $1,795. It struggled at that $1,800 mark for a long time until it broke through, got to this level, and then it just stops. Silver had the same kind of a day. It got to $22.78. That was down 3.5%, and it just stopped. Stops.
Yeah, crazy.
Platinum. Yeah, markets don't do that. Markets are down 10 platinum at 1,028, but palladium really irritates me. Up 58 at 2,470. And again, that's a Russia play right there. So,
hey, you know, I had a thought. I wonder if behind the scenes, good old Vlad, as in Putin, has invested through, you know, a proxy oligarch or two, has invested in a lot of palladium. And that's what all these headlines about, just pushing up the price of palladium so they can make a couple of more $1 billion and then head for the hills.
Well, I mean,
I don't want to start any rumors or anything.
I definitely do believe it's a play because, I mean, palladium is mined in Russia, so I have no doubt about it that the price is going up is due to something, whatever is happening to Russia.
Manipulation. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Or they could shut it off too. When we already have a supply chain issue, Russia could just shut it off.
Yeah.
So I definitely do believe he is using that. And when you look at what palladium is used for, it would, it would, on top of the chips.
Or battery components.
And the chip shortage.
For the West. Yeah.
It would definitely be, have an impact. So, absolutely. So where is it going to go now is the question. And then once it gets there and all of a sudden there isn't this issue with Russia, is it going to tank or is it going to stay to that high level? Because even this deal with Russia, it's not over. Even if he stops and pulls some of his troops out, so it's not over. This isn't just going to go away. And that's the problem with a lot of these situations, Dave. You know, they come up with various things just to put on pause, but what's really fixed? What terms do people really, and maybe the pause is the fix. Maybe that's the only thing that can come out of it is a pause. So, but he's running out of time. And because of his, you know, his time in office is soon to be had.
Well,
so,
because of the weather, yeah, the ground, the frozen ground is going to thaw, and those tanks aren't going to be able to manipulate over mud, the way they presumably can over the frozen tundra.
True, that's true too. But I mean, if he's going to do this incursion into his presidency is short-lived. He only has until, I don't know, if he'll be reelected and so forth, but he has a time issue just like I think the Democrats do. You know, they have a time issue of this election and the 2024 election. So anyway, so we had a hard day in gold, great buying opportunities. USDX today, I mean, it's 97.22, up 0.74. Crude oil was down 29 at 87.06. The paper markets today, and again, they were high. Gosh, how high was the Dow today?
Close to 500.
Yeah, now it's down 7 for the close.
Yeah.
34,160.
It was down almost 200.
And they brought it back. S&P down 23, 4,326. And the S&P had a similar day, 189 points to the downside, 13,352. Asian markets were all negative. European markets were all positive. They kind of followed suit. But they really didn't do, the only one that was up over 1% was the FTSE. What's the 10-year yield doing? 1.807. So even though that's down a little bit on the day, it's still interesting. So let's go ahead and see where we're at today. I mean, if you think the government lies with the number of jobs and employment in this country and some of the other stats that they release, if you think that they're a little judged to some degree or a lot to some degree, GDP grew almost 7% in the fourth quarter. Do you believe that?
Cue the laughter track. I mean the claptrap.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Ugh. I mean, how can they, with a straight face, come out and say that the GDP grew at a much better than expected pace to end 2021? The GDP, and that's the sum of all goods and services produced during the October through December period, increased at a 6.9% annualized rate. And that's even higher than what the economists were looking for. They were only looking for 5.5%. And the increase was well above the unrevised 2.3% growth in the third quarter. And gains came from increases in private inventory investment, strong consumer activity, as reflected in a personal consumption expenditures, exports. And we'll talk about exports in a little bit, I'm sure. And business spendings, as measured by non-residential fixed investments. Across the board, decreases in the pace of government spending subtracted from GDP, as it did imports. The quarter brought an end to a 2021 that saw a 5.7 increase in annualized GDP. So there you have it, Dave.
There you have it, Melody. Well, apparently, it would have been even higher had it not been for a 4% slump in transportation orders. I presume that means, well, a lot of it is got to be cars, trucks, vehicles. Excuse me. And, of course, supply issues, the supply chain disruptions, along with this, what they call robust consumer and business demand. And a lot of that being spurred by the stimulus from the Congress and the Fed in 20 and 21 led to all sorts of imbalances across the economic spectrum. Consumer activity, which accounts for more than two-thirds of GDP, rose 3.3% for the quarter. But gross private domestic investment, which is a metric that measures business spending in an inventory, soared 32%. Not going to go into the whys and wherefores, but yesterday Fed Chair Powell did note in his I'm not going to call it bizarre anymore because it's par for the course. It's just normal for the Fed after a meeting in this particular, particularly in this day and age. Powell warning that growth right now is slowing, though he views the overall economy as strong. Just part of the Orwellian Fed speak that drives Melody and me crazy. So be on the lookout tomorrow, though. The PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, will be released. That's the Fed's preferred inflation gauge.
I guess they're going to lie there too, right?
Yeah, well, we'll see if it changes any minds. I don't know, but it's shaking your head newsworthiness.
I know, and the thing is, it's just if you just take a look around and figure it out, I mean, it's mind-boggling, you know?
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about this later in the program, particularly, you know, an economy that's growing and there are so many people, let's say, on, for example, on food stamps. But enough for now.
All right. We'll talk a little bit more about the Fed. You know, I can't stand talking about the Fed. They ought to shut it down. But anyway, interest rate hikes are likely to worsen. The debt crisis, the global debt crisis, especially for these developing countries. The FOMC concluded its latest policy meeting yesterday, and Powell said they're looking to start raising rates in March. In a report published Sunday, the Jubilee Debt Campaign, amazing, highlighted that developing countries' debt payments rose 120% in 10 years. And, of course, it's currently at the highest since 2001. The average portion of government revenues channeled toward external debt payments increased from less than 7% in 2010 to over 14% in 2021. Dave, I'm losing my voice, so you're going to have to take over there. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Well, I mean, we've talked about this before, and many, if not most, listeners know that, well, increasing interest rate poses a problem because it makes the interest payments on debt, whether it's governmental, corporate, what have you, more expensive. And if it's governmental debt and you're in a lesser developed country with less resources, well, you have a little bit more of a challenge to make your quarterly or twice a year interest payments to your bondholders. Now, the Jubilee campaign, interestingly, called on G20 leaders, quote unquote, leaders, that is, to stop burying their heads in the sand and argued that the global economies urgently need a comprehensive debt cancellation scheme, which compels private lenders to take part in debt relief. The debt cancellation is a double-edged sword as well. We'll talk a little bit about Puerto Rico's new fiscal plan that retires a lot of their debt later in the program. But again, that's not a panacea either. Apparently, 54 countries around the world are currently facing debt crises insofar as debt payments are hampering those governments' ability to, again, pay their share to debt holders, bond holders, and as well as preserve their citizens' economic rights. And apparently another 14 countries are at both public and private debt crisis levels, and so on and so on. World Bank Pres David Malpass called for urgent debt relief, Melody, as well as enhanced transparency and a rebalancing of creditor and debtor powers.
Wow. Well, here's our Thursday report.
Hey, jobs.
Or yeah. Jobs. Fewer Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week.
Okay.
And, of course, that was following three straight increases. They fell by 30,000 to 260. And that was all from the Labor Department this morning. The four-week average of claims, however, which compensates for weekly volatility, it rose by 15,000. And that's the highest in 2 months. So, again, always sort of a little bit of conflicting thoughts on, you know, some of these numbers and so forth. But a recent surge in cases has set back what had been somewhat of a comeback from last year's recession. And supposedly, Dave, are we still in an unemployment recession, I guess?
That's what I say.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the powers that be say the recession ended 2020, that it was just 1 month long.
That's so funny.
Tell that to the 1.7 million people who were collecting jobless aid last week.
Well, one thing that we did run out of is time for this first segment of the program, so we will be back right after these few short ads. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. ClapTrapRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you, yes,
more news.
More news. 1-800-375-4188. Yes, I'm not quite with it, ladies and gentlemen. I've got this thing going on, and so 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And I don't know if you wanted to add anything else to the Fed raising rates. That's pretty...
No, I'll talk about it a little bit more last segment, sort of circle back to it, but... in terms of what we were talking about now.
And, you know, we mentioned in the first segment that we're going to talk more about the economy. And, you know, every day we're told that, you know, there's economic growth. We see this narrative in the corporate financial press, and most of the politicians, they don't shy away from it, and they always want to take credit for it. But when asked for evidence, the answer is usually something to the stock market and the performance. Lombardi Letter this week says if you want to see how the economy is really doing, of course, you got to look beyond the stock market. The stock market is not the economy. And we've been saying that for years. There's been speculative mania in the stock market. And again, for years, stocks have moved higher, not because of the fundamentals, but because of the easy monetary policy that's been set by the Fed. The stock index's performances hasn't been telling us the reality. They just create the illusion. And to see if there's economic growth, just look at how everybody is doing. In times of true economic growth, you'll see an increase in the standard of living. You see people getting better jobs. More money is saved. More products are bought. And, you know, on and on and on. The economy could be far from experiencing growth. That's the sad part. It's far from it. And he lists some of these, excuse me, and he lists some of these that we should be seeing. Some of the facts. Americans, over the past few years, the number of Americans registered in the Department of Agriculture supplemental food stamps. Just come out and say food stamps. change it. It's okay. It's just food stamps. 41.5 million Americans are getting them. 41 million. To give you some idea how big this figure is, U.S. population is roughly 330 million, so about 12%. Of the entire population requires food stamps. If all the Americans who use food stamps formed a country, it would be bigger than Canada, Dave.
Wow. Well, and that's just one way to figure out the state of the U.S. economy. You can look at the savings rate, although there might have been a one-time jump in savings after Americans received multiple stimulus checks. We've been saving less and less money this year than lately, I should say, than before. And that is not a trait of economic growth. 2019, prior to the pandemic, Americans were saving up to 8% of their disposable income. Now, again, in the midst of it, because of lockdowns and the government stimulus, the savings rate surged above 30%. But now, now that the programs have all but ended, it's below what it was in 2019. If the economy was in good condition and job prospects were great, you'd see a higher savings rate. Inflation's the highest it's been in four decades. It's another factor. This has been causing problems for Americans who saved their money. All of a sudden, their dollars are now buying a lot less than before. One only has to take a trip to the grocery store, as my wife let me last weekend. And I was blown away. It's the first time in a couple of months. Sorry to say, but wow. In short, Americans are having a hard time paying for things. All this together, if what we're experiencing is economic growth, what in God's name would an economic slowdown look like, Melody?
And, you know, it's interesting. I hear all these analysts on mainstream media, financial networks, you know, talk about, you know, the positive side of rising rates. And it's like, oh, well, you know, people get paid more, have bigger interest rates on their money. It's like, yeah, they have it. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? Oh, no, it really is. What comes out of their mouths? So that's going to put more pressure. And, you know, I heard, you know, when they raised rates before, it's like, oh, what's a quarter point going to do? Well, when you have inflation, and we always have inflation, so prices are always going up. And the interest rates, even at a quarter percent, a quarter percent increase, it can have a big impact on people when they're already maxed out on their credit cards. They're already maxed out on being able to provide food for their family. They're already maxed out on the amount of gasoline prices, on how much they've risen in the past year. Yeah. So they're already maxed out. So, yes, it will make a big difference in their credit card payment or anything else that they, you know, are impacted by the rising rates. You don't have to have a 3-point rise in interest rates in order to have a major impact.
No, but listen, you're absolutely right. But in that context, if you're talking about 4 or 5 now quarter percent increases this year, that takes it up to what, 1.25?
Yeah.
Another 3 next year, and then maybe 2 the following year. You know, it's over 2%. And again, historically speaking, okay, it's not double digits, but it's a heck of a lot greater for those who are near or who have maxed out, as Melody, you've indicated.
And historically speaking, we've never been in this much debt, though, either. So that it does make a difference. So you will see, so the economy is slowing. I don't care what their little numbers tell us, and it will slow even more. Earlier, you talked about Puerto Rico and pay raises for teachers, firefighters, police officers, and other employees were included in a revised fiscal plan that was approved today. The plan is going to serve their economic blueprint as the island emerges from bankruptcy. Federal Control Board that oversees the U.S. territory finances noted that many government workers have not seen a pay raise since 2014. And, of course, that's a year before Puerto Rico announced it was unable to pay its more than $70 billion public debt load accumulated over decades. And, of course, for the same reasons that we have here, mismanagement, corruption, and excessive borrowing to balance budgets. But what I ask you about this, though, Dave, who lost the $70 billion? They were unable to pay it, so who were the ones that lost that $70 billion public debt?
Yeah, I mean, a combination of things. Certainly, I mean, those who were in office, who were responsible for oversight, the control of, well, for ensuring that funds were available to pay the holders of that debt, just I don't know if they flew the coup. I mean, certainly they had a couple of bad hurricanes, particularly Maria, mm-hmm. Devastated the island and affected jobs and thus governmental revenue, tax revenue. So that, I mean, that was a big thing, but this just didn't happen overnight. I mean, this is years in the making. And you know, if you know you don't have the wherewithal to pay your bondholders, it's, you shouldn't be incurring debt. But that falls on deaf ears, or did certainly in our U.S. territory to the south.
All righty. Are we going to go to robots?
Oh, man. Yep, got to go to robots.
I heard they're already in stores. Lightweight robots to high-tech van routing system. British online supermarket Ocado has unveiled a suite of innovations that it predicted will raise its returns and win new customers for its technology. Ocado has already struck deals. Ocado.
I think I call it Ocado.
Ocado has already struck deals to provide its technology to supermarkets in 8 countries. And that includes Kroger here in the U.S., Aeon in Japan, Casino in France, and Coles in Australia. And it's going to drive up their market value to $14.5 billion. Now, this latest innovation includes a robot that is 80% lighter than its predecessor and described by the company as the world's lightest and most efficient grocery fulfillment bot. It said robotic arms has also been developed that work with the bots to automate the picking and packing of customers' orders directly from the grid. The firm expects the robotic arms to be capable of picking close to 50% of its product range just by the end of next year, and 80% in the long run. Ocado has also automated the process of loading of customers' orders onto delivery frames ready for dispatch. Other innovations include a routing system that enables the delivery of both short lead time orders and larger, longer lead time orders from the same van, and a virtual distribution center that cuts the costs associated with inbound stocks.
Well, here comes the marketing pitch.
Convenience.
Yeah, lower costs. Well, Tim Steiner, the CEO who founded Ocado 20 years ago, said partners would also be able to achieve greater product from the same or smaller building footprint, plus reduce their costs, their labor costs, by 30%. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, in the medium term, and 40% in the long term, and address labor shortage challenges. No, I just had a vision, but I can't share it. It's too controversial. That's the bottom line. I mean, 30-40%, and certainly it's a challenge, particularly for these CEOs in a day and age where, you know, the bottom line affects the bonuses you get at the end of the year.
So, you know,
it's a wave of the future that is it's unstoppable. It's just a matter of how quickly it's going to take over our lives.
Yeah. And I've said it before on this program. When you go to a grocery store, don't go to the self-checkout line. Don't do that. I mean, you pay to have someone to work to bag your groceries. And if you keep going to the self-checkout line, those jobs are already being lost.
Yeah. That's how many less of your neighbors are now out of it, or their kids are out of a job, part-time.
And if the economy continues to get worse, Dave, there might be other people that might want those jobs in the future, and they won't be there.
It's ironic as heck, isn't it, Melody, that these grand, in some respects they are grand, these grand human innovations are resulting in less jobs for humans. It's more than I know. I used to just scratch my head. Now I pound it. It's like, well, hey, stop pounding your head. It's not your fault.
But yeah, so, you know, don't do it things for convenience, even if it takes you a little bit longer. And I'll tell you when I went into, I mean, you go into like Home Depot, they only have maybe one checkout for full service.
Yeah, that's all I saw the other day.
Yeah. And it's clear at the end. They have all the machines close to the doors, and then the checkout is, you know, way at the other end. But, I mean, you're seeing this in more and more stores. They're just eliminating the people, the grocery stores. You see, and it's all, you know, and it's just like, mm-mm-mm. And you see a lot of these younger people that are doing it. And I had to congratulate a woman when I was in the grocery store the other day. She only had, like, three products in her little carry-on thing, on her little carry tote. And she went to the full service, and she waited in line. So she knew what was going on. She could have did the self-service and been out in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. But she waited for the person in front of her to fill it, you know, to complete their checkout with their fuller cart. So you can see people do it if you pay it, you know. But I'm always looking, and I'm always checking things out. So, but yeah,
just a visionary, Melody.
Yeah, well,
keep on looking. Keep on looking over the horizon.
Yeah, well, you know, Olympic athletes—they're being warned about surveillance and hacks. You know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the threat of cyber attacks on the Olympic athletes and others attending the upcoming Winter Olympics. Today, we're learning that when Olympic athletes land in Beijing for the Olympics, they'll be loaded up with burner phones. And will likely leave their own devices behind. Experts continue to sound the alarm about cybersecurity fears during the games because of the Communist Party. That's known penchant for cyber espionage. And of course, they want a desire to control online content. And I'm going to share, I have a customer who married a lady from China. Her family's still there. And he called me up when they were leaving. Oh, he called me from there, and he said he wanted to know what's going on in the news. And I was like, well.
Wow.
Don't you want. He says, it takes 2 to 3 weeks.
Jeez.
For us to get the news that you get the day it happens. So that's if they get it.
That's sad.
People forget who China is and what they do.
They're not the band, Melody. They're the bro. the big bro.
And I hear us going into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients this final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. If she's on the other line, don't hesitate to leave her a message. She'll get back to you later today, or more than likely in the morning. I know we've been talking an awful lot about this, and I hope I don't come off in this next one as Captain Obvious. But it doesn't happen that often these days, and you know, a lot of Americans are going to be asking these questions in the coming months. Now that the Fed is on a path to raise interest rates, not once, twice, not even three or four times. It could be, you know, five, eight, seven, ten times over the next couple years. Will mortgage rates go up? How about my car loan or my credit card payments? How about those invisible rates on bank CDs that I have some of my retirement in? Any chance of getting a few dollars more there? Well, again, with Fed signaling yesterday that it's going to begin raising the Fed funds rate as soon as March, consumers and businesses will eventually feel it. Not immediate, but not too long after it. Fed's thinking is that with America's job market essentially back to normal, and inflation surging well above its 2% target, well, now's the time to raise the rate from near zero. The Fed has slashed its key rate after the recession erupted 2 years ago. The idea was to support the economy by encouraging more borrowing and spending. Certainly that it got now. But now, by making loans gradually costlier, Fed hopes to stem the surge of price increases that have been squeezing consumers and businesses over the past year. Well, here are some of the main questions on what this could mean for consumers and businesses. Well, one, I'm considering buying a house. Will mortgage rates go higher? Well, they have been inching up the past couple of weeks. As the future, probably, but hard to say when and how much. Mortgage rates don't usually rise in tandem with the Fed's rate increases. Sometimes they even move in the opposite direction. Long-term mortgages tend to track the rate on the 10-year Treasury yield, which in turn is influenced by a variety of factors, not just the Fed funds rate. Including investor expectations for future inflation, for example, and global demand for treasuries. When inflation is expected to stay high, investors tend to sell treasuries and buy more gold, for example. Well, the yields on those bonds tend to provide little to no return, especially once you account for inflation. As that happens, the selling pressure on bonds tends to force treasuries to higher rates. Yields then rise in response. The result can be higher mortgage rates. It can also mean higher gold prices. Here's another question. Does that mean home loan rates won't rise much anytime soon? Again, well, maybe, not necessarily. Inflation far exceeded the Fed's 2% target. Fewer investors are buying treasuries as a safe haven. And with numerous Fed rate hikes now expected, the rate on the 10-year note could rise over time. And so by extension, so would mortgage rates. It's just hard to say, you know, how much and when. On the other hand, even when treasury yields are comparatively low relative to inflation as they are now, investors often still flock to them. That's especially true at times of global turmoil, like today. Nervous investors from around the world often pour money into treasuries. And, of course, gold goes without saying because the regard is as ultra safe. All that buying pressure tends to keep a lid on treasury rates, which generally has the effect of keeping mortgage rates relatively low. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, your guess is as good as mine, but expect a trend of higher mortgage rates. Same holds true for credit cards, variable interest debt, car loans, and so on and so forth. Now, finally, what about the measly CD interest rates and money market account interest I've been getting? Well, those rates will probably go up, though that will take time as well. Savings accounts, certificates of deposit, money markets typically don't track the Fed changes again. Instead, banks tend to capitalize on a higher rate environment to try to thicken their profits, which oftentimes have smaller margins. And they do so by imposing higher rates on borrowers without necessarily offering any juicier rates to savers. There's only a few exceptions to that. One of them's banks with high yield savings accounts, typically only available through the big, too big to fail banks. I mean, these accounts are known for aggressively competing for depositors. The only catch is that they typically require significant deposits, often $100,000 or more, sometimes less, $50,000, sometimes even $25,000. But we have a better idea for your low or high yield savings. Gold and silver, 1-800-375-4188 for the latest prices. Now, next, as we've been talking a lot for a while about the end of the so-called Fed put. Well, yesterday, Powell confirmed that for at least now, it really is going to be gone. The market sell-off we've seen lately likely won't derail any plans to hike rates starting in March. Next summer now saying we might even get more than four rate hikes in this year alone, if inflation keeps running as hot as it's been. One of Powell's most interesting answers during yesterday's press conference was where he talked about the difference between the rate hike plans now and the rate hiking cycle back in 2015. These are Powell's words. In part, if you look back to where we were in so many measures, it is historically tight. I think the least tight aspect of it is looking at the unemployment rate, which is still below our median estimate of maximum employment. In other words, from 2015 to 2018, the economic situation was quite marginal. Inflation was mild, certainly milder. Growth was mild. And unemployment was not all that low. At the time, the Fed rate hike seemed to be in pursuit of some idea of normalization, like getting off zero for the sake of getting off it, as opposed to addressing any real inflation or overheating threat like today. In that type of environment, any economic headwind or market volatility was a reason for the Fed to pause. Just didn't have much room for error. Now, Powell thinks the Fed is way stronger. For one thing, inflation is in fact hot. even hotter than being reported, but they're also falling for the government's sub 4% headline unemployment rate. It's not 3.9%. You know, it's over 7%, and that's the U6. It's likely, you know, double digits. And everybody who once was working or who would like to but have just started to look were counted. And while there's a lot of debate about where the labor market can go or what maximum employment actually looks like, the Fed's expectation is that growth and job gains is going to remain strong for some time. Plus, household and state and local balance sheets, at least in the aggregate, appear to be in decent shape. So from the Fed's perspective, the situation is no longer marginal. It's banked an extremely impressive recovery in its own eyes, at least, and can now spend some of those gains to fight inflation, right? We'll see. At least, you know, that's the bet. In a stock market sell-off like in the past, well, actually since the beginning of the year, but especially the last week or so, at least, it just isn't going to change the math very much. I mean, Powell himself said as much yesterday that, well, the sell-off isn't a big concern. For a long time, some, like Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal, have been saying that the stock market is the economy. He says people say it's not, but he says really it often is, or has been anyway. He says stocks affect business and investment decisions more than interest rates. Stocks affect households, their 401ks and IRAs and so on. Wiesenthal goes on to say you can make the argument that right now that's not really the case. He believes it's not the stock market that's become disconnected from the real economy per se, but that we could have a compression in stock valuations. There's been a lot of that, particularly in the NASDAQ. You have it without it having a big downstream impact on future real activity. Wiesenthal says it's striking that even with the plunge in growth stocks, you know, in the S&P 500 being down 9% already so far this year, we've seen barely any increase in credit spreads. That wasn't the case during the post-Great Recession corrections in 2015 and at the end of 2018. For years, there's been a class of investors and pundits who've basically been begging for something like this. They criticize the Fed for keeping the training wheels on the market or babying it in some way or another. Well, because we've had such a robust recovery since the March 2020 collapse, well, helped in part by this unprecedented response by Congress and the White House and the Fed, trillions of dollars that we know of anyway, the Fed feels it's in a position to do exactly that, ignore market selling because of the strength that it now sees in the, quote, real economy. Let's see where that takes us over the next several months. Nothing else. It looks like a roller coaster ride to me. And remember, like we talked about in this week's newsletter article, ladies and gentlemen, that increased volatility in the past anyway has been good for gold, especially when we're talking about inflation of 5% or higher. All right, in the remaining minutes of program. Let's go back overseas where the U.S. and NATO have made no concessions to the main Russian demands to resolve the Ukraine crisis, including giving Moscow a guarantee that Ukraine can never join the NATO alliance. Hasn't happened, ain't gonna happen. The focus is now on how Russia's going to respond, a decision that rests squarely with Putin and one that could determine whether Europe and perhaps the U.S. will be plunged into a war. Here are a couple things to know about the latest geopolitical tensions surrounding Ukraine. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said that the response from the U.S., most recent one, and from NATO, leaves little ground for optimism. At the same time, he added that there are always prospects for continuing a dialogue, which he says is in both of our interests. Meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov noted that the U.S. response contains some elements that could lead to the start of a serious talk on secondary issues, not having spelled them out. But Lavrov emphasized that the response from NATO and the U.S. contains no positive response on the main issue, again, the non-expansion of NATO. Let's see. A top Putin associate, former president and ex-prime minister Dmitry Medvedev, says a war would be catastrophic, and he hopes that Ukraine will choose leaders who want normal ties with Russia. So he's putting the ball back in Ukraine's and implicitly in NATO's and the U.S.'s lap. Medvedev, who's still deputy head of Russia's Security Council, said a Russia-NATO conflict would be the most dramatic and simply catastrophic scenario, and I hope it will never happen. Well, there's a lot of us who feel the same way. Let's hope that clearer heads prevail and that whatever is driving forces to the border finds a solution. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody be back tomorrow with Butch. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival. And please, be safe out there. Bye-bye.